Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2...
You have just tuned in to episode 19-40 of the John Jacob Schmidt Show here at Radio Free Redoubt. This is the voice of the American Redoubt, broadcasting, streaming from the Free Zones. I hope you guys had a blessed weekend and a blessed week. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the show yesterday. Right after that, I got to zip over right after the show. Zipped over to Hayden, Idaho to meet up with a bunch of patriots over there. And that was really good. Got to meet one of the sheriff's candidates again, John Green. Got to talk to him. And we're going to do an interview here in the next couple of weeks as soon as he's available and back in town. And I want to go through as many of the sheriff's candidates that are willing to and do some interviews and let you guys decide for those of you in Kootenai County, Idaho, anyway. And this is a very important race because it is the epicenter of the American Redoubt. It is in the heart of the American Redoubt. And it's probably the number one relocation location of all the counties in northern Idaho, followed by Bonner County and then Boundary County. Both of those to the north. So it's a key race because the left has really targeted northern Idaho aggressively. And we've got to make sure that the redoubt holds, that freedom holds, that our conservative Judeo-Christian values hold there in the heart of the American redoubt. All eyes are on it. So anyway, that's going to be a real 2020 is going to be a wild ride. This is an epic time to be alive right now. If you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, there is a battle for everything that you care about, everything you value. It's time for patriots to roll up their sleeves, get in the fight. I heard a statistic today that the attendees to President Trump's rally in Dallas. I guess they did a poll, and I think it was 18 to 20% of them have not registered to vote or have not voted in, 20 years? I can't remember the exact figure. It was astounding. But what that shows is an awakening of the silent majority, the sleeping giant of conservatives who are making the transition, and it's about time. It's overdue. Where patriotic Americans are now becoming patriots, where it goes from a feeling in your heart or toward America, toward actually taking action to preserve the things that we care about. That's the difference between someone who's patriotic and someone who is a patriot. Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to cover tonight, so let's start with the news and commentary. The news and commentary brought to you by the author, Glenn Tate, of the 299 Days book series. All 10 books are out, including the audiobooks. Check out that book series about the collapse and the rebuilding in America, the socioeconomic, political collapse and the rebuilding, I should say. And you can find out more at 299days.com. All right. From the timesofisrael.com, the U.S. said it's considering a plan to remove nukes from a Turkish base near the Syrian border. The American military is believed to keep some 50 tactical nuclear bombs at Incirlik in southern Turkey. They say that they're effectively now being held hostage to Erdogan, the president, I would say dictator, president of Turkey. U.S. officials met in recent days to review plans to remove some 50 nuclear weapons housed under American control at the Incirlik Air Base in Turkey amid growing tensions with Ankara, the New York Times reported just this last Monday. So the U.S. President Donald Trump said Monday he would issue a new sanction against Turkey, halting trade negotiations and raising steel tariffs in an effort to pressure Ankara to stop its ongoing offensive attack in Syria against Kurdish forces. So two officials told the newspaper that state and energy department officials were quietly examining ways to remove the tactical nukes, with one official saying they were effectively hostage to Turkish President Erdogan. Not these officials being hostage, but the nukes. So very interesting. I'm surprised they actually didn't get those out of there sooner as this stuff started heating up, especially after the failed coup attempt against Erdogan in recent months, or what, last year. From the Wall Street Journal, this is good. Good news is hard to find on American campuses these days, so we're even happier than usual to report a victory for free speech at the University of Michigan. Who would have thought? So they conceded that its speech police are legally indefensible. The school administration has agreed under legal duress to disband its speech police and reform its student code. Their retreat came after a successful legal challenge last month to Michigan's bias response team by Speech First, a nonprofit focusing on campus speech. The university's bureaucratic bias cops had the power to investigate students accused of speech deemed unacceptable or full of hate or extremism or whatever. So anyway, the rest of that story is over at wallstreetjournal.com. So Natural News brings this one I talked about yesterday, and they title it, "Now Even Questioning LGBT Indoctrination of Children Gets Teachers Suspended." Now, this is not in the United States. This is in the UK. It's our canary in the coal mine. It's why America, England, look at England. England is why America. They're essentially fallen. It's sad. But England's public school system has decided that it is no longer okay for its faculty and staff members to do anything other than nod and smile in full agreement every time a new LGBTQP curriculum is suddenly and forcibly imposed upon innocent children in the classroom. Now, apparently a 74-year-old school board member learned this when she was recently reportedly suspended from her job simply for questioning a staff decision to implement an LGBTQP Pride Month. And she was saying, you know, shouldn't we consult the parents? The parents should have a say in this besides just exposing children to stuff that without even consulting the parents. She said, she's quoted as saying, "I said that parents had not been consulted. There would be parents with children from religious backgrounds who would object and not want their children to have this form of sex education." So she strongly urged her colleagues to think about these children and their families, emphasizing the fact that as a mother herself, she would not want her sons to be reading any of the LGBTQP books that were stocked in the library, nor would she want them to participate in this Pride Month. Well, apparently this triggered one of the school's faculty who stormed out, and then she gets scolded. "Look what you've gone and done. You've upset him." So then she gets suspended. This is in England, once again, but it's coming to a school district near you unless you get involved. So now apparently it's now homophobic to express viewpoints that in any way trigger LGBTQPs. And along that note, unbelievable here from sfgate.com, a jury awards nearly $20 million to a police sergeant who was told to tone down his gayness. He was up for a promotion And he was told, apparently the command staff has a problem with your sexuality. A member of the St. Louis County Board of Police Commissioners allegedly told this officer. He said, if you ever want to see a white shirt, you know, like get a promotion, you should tone down your gayness. So now this jury awards this guy almost $20 million. So now he's flamboyant and rich. This is where we have the lunatics running the asylum. More protection, more special protection for the sexual deviants. In Breitbart News, there's a couple stories here that tie in with this. This is UN driven, by the way. Democrat legislators have drafted a bill to import at least 50,000, get this, climate refugees per year, despite the damaging impact on America's wages and rent, not to mention the cultural revolution that would take place because of that. So this Nydia Velasquez, Democrat from New York, who was originally born in Puerto Rico, she's the chair of the House Committee on Small Business. And she said, despite this administration's effort to strip the world's most vulnerable populations of refuge, this legislation will not only reaffirm our nation's longstanding role as a home to those fleeing conflict and disasters, but it will also update it to reflect changes to our world brought on by a changing climate. So they're working to take the climate change hoax to a new level by demographically altering the United States. Now, these are not people that are coming here to become Americans. They are people that are coming here to bring a foreign system of governance in their hearts and in their minds. Many of them are Muslims. And they are on a jihad to alter our form of governance. And now, this is a bill that was just introduced. Climate refugees. So more madness. Well, if that wasn't enough, the New York Times reported that refugees are needed to fill the void of cultural diversity in white towns. More refugees must be resettled across the United States to fill a quote unquote void of cultural diversity in towns that are made up of a majority of white Americans. It's a bad thing now to be in a town where you're majority white Americans. So, as President Trump is set to lower refugee admissions for the third year, keeping his 2016 campaign promise to significantly reform the program after almost four decades, the New York Times published a report this week detailing how Congolese refugees already living in the U.S. are looking to bring their foreign relatives to the country through the refugee resettlement program. And now, the New York Times reports this. To supporters like Mr. Engen, the Congolese are filling a void of cultural diversity in a town that is nearly 90% white. In the 1980s, Hmong refugees from Laos settled in Missoula. The children of immigrant families are usually the few students of color in the city classroom, while their parents work long hours at businesses eager for help. So now, Missoula, there's who picked? Oh, it was the Stark Raving Mad page. Also, they're back. It's good to see them back. They've weighed in on this as well. So I'll share the rest of this for you, but you guys can read this in the highlights and resources posting, or you can just go to Breitbart.com. And pick that story up there. So they are specifically targeting cities that need more diversity because they're too white. I can just imagine if they used the same measure here and looked at Compton or Watts or the Bronx or someplace and said, Harlem, you know what? This is just not culturally diverse enough. We need to ship. How about all of the white refugees coming here need to be shipped to those places? We just need more whites there. It's too black. their heads would be exploding if somebody suggested that. But they can't, all in the name of respecting other cultures, they can't respect your culture if you are of European heritage, apparently. Now, normally I don't cover racial issues because really race has nothing to do with the American Redoubt. But this does, because it's not about the color of their skin. It is the content of their character that concerns us, because these are largely Muslims. And in the European countries where we've seen them bring these refugees into these areas, we've seen rape epidemics, we've seen crime epidemics, mosques are replacing churches, and kids are beat up on their way to school because they're not Muslim. There are places where the police cannot go, or anybody who's not Muslim can go, whether it's a fire, EMS, or police. They're called no-go zones. And we've seen the failure of those refugee resettlement policies elsewhere. So we have a proven record to refer to, and we don't want it in our country. They don't belong here. They don't need to be shipping them 10,000 miles to the United States. There are other countries elsewhere that they could, for a fraction of the cost, even. And once things stabilize in their countries, they'd be closer. It'd be easier to return them and integrate them. If they're truly refugees, just seeking refuge because of hostilities, or no, now it's climate change. You can't get away from that. You can't get away from climate change. Maybe we'll just bring them to the United States. Now, from the stark raving mad, here we go. At rhinopack.org, the rhino hunters of the Pacific Northwest. Idaho senator needs, it's time for him to go. Idaho senator pushes Muslim immigration. In a shocking display of tone-deaf political pandering, Idaho Republican Senator James Risch, remember the name, James Risch, he's on the naughty list. He needs to be replaced. He's pushing a bill offering to transport unlimited numbers of Middle East Muslim fighters to the U.S. The only limitations is that the fighter must claim to have, at one time or another, helped one of the myriad U.S.-funded groups in the area, such as the Syrian Democratic Forces. Not a problem. You come right on in. Of course, they practice deception. Deception is allowed under Islam, as long as it helps to advance Islam. So, of course, they're going to tell you whatever you want to hear. All you got to do is claim to have, at some point, fought for one of these U.S.-funded groups. And, of course, you know how good their record keeping is. They don't even, there's, you can just claim it. The loyalty, quote-unquote loyalty, of most fighters in the region is fluid, to say the least, depending on which way the war winds are blowing at the time. Identification of any particular individual is problematic, since fighters routinely use a variety of names. Risch's bill will result in the importation of tens of thousands of militant, military-aged Muslim males with extensive warfighting experience and no saleable civilian skills, usually illiterate, even in their own language, and loyalty to only a 7th century bloodthirsty warlord. What could possibly go wrong? No kidding. And out of California, the headline here, California legalizes theft. Well, we already knew that, but let's see what they have to say. Proposition 74 was passed by the mob. I mean, a wide margin of California voters. The proposition, in essence, decriminalizes the theft of items whose total value is less than $950. The object of Proposition 74 was ostensibly to decongest the courts and clear out prison cells previously clogged by countless petty criminals. Supposedly, this would free resources and allow for more timely prosecution of real criminals. So if you have something stolen from you and it's less than $950, they intend to decriminalize that. So too bad on you. So the results, while disappointing, were entirely predictable. Incidents of petty theft and shoplifting skyrocketed. No kidding. It's not a crime anymore. The druggies, the derelicts, and the destitute know that they can no longer be arrested or prosecuted for stealing. Now they simply walk into a store, take what they think they need, be it a candy bar or a box of baby diapers or a bottle of whiskey, and walk out. Hooray. There's no longer any need to stand in line at the checkout counter. Wow. Welcome to California, the land of the free stuff. And here they're covering this story out of Missoula. Missoula, too many whites, the headline says. In a blatantly racist editorial posing as a news article, this week the New York Times described towns such as Missoula, Montana, as being simply too white. The Times lamented Missoula, which is nearly 90% white, is desperately in need of cultural diversity, quote unquote, and suggested Missoula and similar all-white towns as good locations for Congolese refugees looking to bring foreign relatives to the U.S. Shockingly, the Times whimpered, the problem besets entire states. New Hampshire, like its neighbors Vermont and Maine, is nearly all-white. An accelerated effort needs to be made to decrease white populations in such states. Too many whites has posed an array of problems for new arrivals who often find themselves isolated and alone without the comfort and support of a built-in community. So let's start building in these communities for these folks, because guess what? It doesn't matter how many built-in communities they have, they still isolate themselves, as has been proven in Europe. God bless the Czechs and the Hungarians who aren't putting up with any of this, and they're not taking any of these so-called refugees. In the last couple of years, the U.S. has absorbed more than 1.7 million third world primary Muslim refugees through a vast array of tax-funded, thank you, humanitarian projects, that the unconcealed purpose of which is to diminish the presence and voting influence of native-born citizens. And of course, they cover also 50,000 climate refugees. You can read more of that at the Stark Raving Mad page at rhinopack.org. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we got more stuff to cover here about California, the frustration that has risen amid another round of California blackouts. Well, blackouts are here to stay. Some estimates are saying for the next possibly 10 years. Well, I say dig in. It's going to be longer than that. They're just trying to soften the blow. Welcome to socialism. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there. Hi, I want to take a moment to let you all know about a great offer that will put up-to-the-minute intelligence and breaking news in your hands, often minutes or hours before you'll hear about it on the news or anywhere else. The director of Alerts USA and the editor of The Threat Journal, Steve Oxtokolnis, is offering a discounted subscription to all of you as listeners of Radio Free Redoubt and members of AMRON. The Alerts USA subscription is normally $99 a year, but if you click on the Alerts USA banner at RadioFreeRedoubt.com or AMRON.com, that will take you through to a page where you can subscribe for just $75. Whether it's a natural disaster, active shooter, terrorist attack, or other rapidly developing security or emergency situation, you'll be among the first to know. Information is king, but accurate and timely information is priceless. I not only use Alerts USA, I count on it. However, if you're not able to pay for a subscription at this time, then you can still sign up for the free Threat Journal email subscription to get weekly intelligence briefs and stay in the know on what occurred in the previous days. Again, go to RadioFreeRedoubt.com or AMRON.com and click on the Alerts USA banner. Welcome back to segment two of The Voice of the American Redoubt. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, helping patriots just like you get strategically relocated to the northern part of the panhandle in the heart of the American Redoubt in North Idaho. That's SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. Check them out today. Now, yesterday, I started covering an article by DodgeGlobe.com, and it's titled, Frustration Rises Amid Another Round of California Blackouts. So it offers a real-world case that we can examine to find out how we can be prepared for these types of instant cases. So our grid is amazing, but it is also has vulnerabilities. In many parts of the country, we have an aging power grid system. There's human error. There's natural disasters, terrorist attacks, physical attacks. There are a lot of things that can take the grid down partially or completely. So that happens. And I know in the American Redoubt, we have ice storms and snowstorms and wind storms that periodically take our power down. And pretty much across the United States, there's some type of situation, there's circumstances in pretty much most of the country where your power is susceptible to going out, even if it's just for a few hours or for a few days. The wildfires, because the PG&E deliberately, intentionally turning off the power to avoid arcing and causing wildfires, which is taking out whole communities, has had Californians in the last week twice in the last month without power for days at a time. So they're all frustrated, and they're going through these stories about how people have endured going without power. So I'm going to kind of pick up where I left off yesterday, and I'll kind of cover over some of this, kind of blur some of it together with tonight's story. So across Northern California, this is an AP article, by the way, Associated Press, get full credit for this article. Good job. Way to go. There you go. Okay, so across Northern California, people worried about charging cell phones and electric vehicles, finding gasoline and cash, and keeping their food from spoiling and staying warm themselves. They donned headlamps at home and parked their cars outside inoperable automatic garage doors. You're as I'm reading this, you have your own thoughts forming, right? First of all, dump the electric vehicles. It's part of the climate change scam. Ridiculous. Or have an alternate, have a backup. But anyway, people are worried about charging cell phones and electric vehicles. Right now with portable, there's so much available on the market for portable power supplies. There's no reason for you not to be able to charge cell phones. They have hand crank chargers. Put that on your list of a way of charging those items free from commercial electricity. Do an Amazon search and start finding something to charge yourself. I have a couple of them. They're about the size of a cell phone. One of them has a solar panel on it, so I can charge that thing by putting it out in the sun. Or I can plug it in using a USB port. And USB power takes so little power. A backup battery, just a 7-amp or a 10-amp lead-acid battery with an adapter and a USB adapter can charge your stuff up for days, for a long, long time without recharging. So anyway, have the ability to charge your stuff. Don't sit there. You might want to actually try this. This is why we do T-Rex once a year, Teotihuacan readiness exercise, to pull the switch on your house and, except for maybe your freezers, whatever. If you don't have a generator yet, but you practice this stuff, that's when it's revealed to you your weaknesses in your plan. So, and I'm going to go over some ideas here in just a moment. 1.5 million people in 29 counties, including a million still without power. This is from the article several days ago, from a shutoff over the weekend. So here's a mother of two, lives north of San Francisco. She's got these two young children, a five-year-old and a three-year-old. She discovered she was low on gas, and she began to panic as she drove around looking for an open gas station. Now, many of these were open, but they would only take cash because they couldn't run their ATMs, or they couldn't run their card readers. So she wound up driving to San Francisco about 20 miles away before she found a store that was open where she could get gas. And then she stocked up on cash after realizing she only had a dollar in her wallet. If at all possible, you should keep $100 in small bills broken down in cash for these instances. There's plenty of times when I've gone to a gas station where the nearest gas station is another 10, 15 miles away. For some reason, their ATM wasn't working, or their card reader wasn't working. Their computer was down, or their system was down, but they were able to take cash. They had electricity, but for some reason, it just wasn't working. Be able to pay for your fuel with cash or buy items that you need. So keep that on you. Where else? Oh, some folks here that cannot, they do have their own well, but their well was not operational because they didn't have electricity. Simple fix is a generator. If you're living in California, type of lifestyle that you have, you've got the money to buy a 220 generator. If you have to, hire an electrician to come and wire it up for you so that you can at least have running water if you have your own well. So here's one. A woman and her husband lost power on Saturday, and they've been spending the time since playing backgammon by candlelight and going to bed early. Now, what's wrong with that? That is a great picture. Board games and things that don't take electricity are a great idea. But hey, make an adventure out of it. You know what? Play some board games or some card games with your spouse by candlelight and go to bed early. It's not a big deal. All right, so, but they were saying, she was saying, the power that PG&E has over all of us has crippled us in a lot of ways. Well, that's why you should be self-reliant. We keep saying it. You've got to be self-reliant. So, I've got some things that I want to go over with you, some ideas that can help you out to help plan for your grid down situation, because we've all been there where the power went out. Now, most of the time, it's just, you know, a few minutes or a few hours and then it's back up and running. But I have been in situations, many of you, where you've been down for days without commercial power. So, lighting. You want to make sure that you have lots of flashlights available in various different places. I have flashlights in my vehicles. I have headlamps. I use them regularly and when it's not a grid down situation. They're just handy, hands-free lighting. But have light where you can get to it in the dark, where you can know right where it is. You keep it at the same place all the time. You could walk through your house in the pitch black dark and reach up on the shelf and your hand's going to hit that flashlight or that headlamp every time because you keep it at the same place every time. You keep your batteries charged up. That light is to help you navigate around while you get other real light up, like your solar lanterns and your gas propane lanterns and things like that. So keep that stuff handy. And spare batteries next time you go to Costco or next time you go to one of these box stores or whatever. Buy a case of them. And my general rule is two is one and one is none. So if I buy a AA or AAA pack of batteries, as soon as I break into that to take one battery out, then it's on my list to buy another pack. So I always have one unopened because from experience, I've gotten down to one or two, three batteries left and I hadn't replaced the pack. And so now I'm out of batteries, right? So two is one, one is none. Water. You've got to be able to have... You've got water is the number one issue in every disaster that we've studied and read about. Water was at the very top of the list. This actually should be number one. But if the power goes out and you're in the dark, the first thing you got to do is be able to see, right? So we talked about being able to see. Fuel, if you have fuel lanterns, keep plenty of propane canisters handy and address that. Look at your house, look around and find out what you need to be able to see and then address that. So water. Water is a big one. And in this kind of a thing, here's, I've stumbled across a little piece of advice here. If you suspect power might go out, fill your bathtub and your sink and flush the toilet. So it's good to take action if the power flickers a few times. Dishwater should be used in a bucket or a plugged sink. That dirty water is just fine for flushing toilets. So some good little pieces of advice that I've stumbled across here and there. I've just copied and pasted stuff for my own preparedness plan. I just want to share some of this with you. Have a water filter. Have the means of filtering water. I keep bleach and pool shock treatment, and then I have a Berkey water filter for filtering that out. So you can pretty much take water out of a mud puddle and put it through a Berkey water filter, and you're going to have clean potable water. And also a portable water method like a Life Straw, which I have several of and stashed in various different packs. But water is at the top of the list. Super important. Let's see. There's different stuff here. Garbage, lots of garbage bags. There's different advice for building burn barrels and burning your trash and so on. Backup power. There are some really affordable generators now there that out there that can aid you in being prepared for keeping your just your refrigerator going, some of your appliances, and a string of lights. I want to go too deep into that. I actually have some resources here that I'll post. The other thing is folks had food, but they couldn't cook it, and food was going bad. It's kind of astounding to me that folks don't have some type of Coleman camp stove or a backpack portable camp stove or some way of cooking. If you do not have something, I have Dutch ovens and briquettes and a couple of camp stoves and a barbecue and everything else. But if you're using your barbecue, then you need fuel, and those things go through fuel pretty quickly. So you should have an additional backup plan. And I strongly recommend propane with an adapter to hook to a large propane tank, so you don't burn through all those small propane canisters. And I also have an adapter where I can refill those small propane canisters from a large regular size propane tank. But have some way of cooking that food so it doesn't go bad. Of course, we're talking to a prepper community here. You guys are all like, check, check, got it, check, check, right? But if this is something that looks like it's going to go, you know, for days at a time, then you need to start cooking the food that's in your freezer and your refrigerator right away before you start breaking into canned foods. That's just common sense, but common sense isn't real common these days anymore. Now, communications. Communications is really important, especially when you're dealing with a moving wildfire. Now, cell phones and the cell phone tower system, that whole infrastructure is extremely resilient. I was monitoring some of these cell phone tower systems and the down reports where they were showing 5%, 10%, 20%, or up to 50% of the cell phone tower coverage in an area was down because of wildfires or because of lack of electricity or backup generators going down. So those cell phones, though, you will almost always have a means of getting information on your cell phone. Even if you got to drive up to the top of a hill to get a better vantage point and get some type of a signal, that's where a lot of information is traveling really quickly. So it really comes down to having a way of charging your cell phone. Now, the other side of that in communications, when all else does fail, there's ham radio, and we're huge proponents of amateur radio. If you don't already have your at least your technician's license to be able to communicate locally and listen to the local repeaters, when it comes to communications, after your cell phone has been taken care of and all your power needs are met, then the next thing would be a scanner for scanning, if nothing else. If you have no aspirations of getting your ham license, then get a scanner, a police scanner, so you can listen to emergency medical services, you can listen to police, fire, and your ham radio repeaters, because a lot of information is being passed over the ham radio repeaters, and that's going to be probably the best way to stay informed of rapidly developing and changing situations like a wildfire in high winds. So communications is key. We've talked, you know, extensively about that. Anyway, I just wanted to just address a few things there. A lot of the stuff is just review for you guys, but as you go through and read that article, or as you're listening to me cover different aspects in that article, just be thinking, what is your plan to overcome the situation that they were faced with? Most of you in this listening audience, you already got it down. I get that. But there's a lot of new listeners. There's a lot of folks that are new to this. They're patriots and they're politically active, but maybe they haven't really considered their preparations much. And we want to be self-reliant, prepared patriots, right? So anyway, that's all I got on that. We got more stuff to cover when we come back. Very interesting, kind of this, the rise of Radio Free, inspired by Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. As we are descending into this chaotic communist, socialist, globalist system, there is an awakening that's happening. And there's a couple of relatively new Radio Free California, Radio Free, our neighbors to the north, and Radio Free Alberta. I'm going to talk about those when we come back. It's very interesting, this new trend of patriots that are setting up communications platforms to inform their fellow patriots in the name of preserving freedom and liberty. This is Radio Free Redoubt. Stay right there.
Remember that twice a week we talk directly to members of the Communist Party on another program.
Freedom-loving Czechs know who you are and warn that you will be held accountable for your sins against your country. We urge those of you who are not completely under the control of communist tyrants to join the forces of freedom. When the day of liberation comes, true justice will weigh your sins against your good deeds. It is not yet too late to change. We have records of the following collaborators: František Svoboda, Karel Nováček, Václav Šmíd, Josef Pekařík, Alois Hodinář.
One podcast dares to be different.
Welcome back to Radio Free Redoubt. This is segment three. Segment three is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. They now offer remote consulting services so they can assist you anywhere in the United States with planning your property in a way that integrates the key elements of water, food, energy, and security. Whether you've already got your property or you are shopping for property and you want some professional help helping you get the most out of that, and also securing your water rights, that's a huge one. But Strategic Landscape Design does that. They've helped a lot of patriots with their setting up their property. So it is strategic. the way you design your property. It's really good. Great folks. All right. Now, there's this new wave coming up of radio free this and that. There's a radio free California. I was just listening to episode 92. And it's titled Suicide of the West Coast. Very interesting. And they have covered mostly California issues, but they do cover a lot of national issues from a conservative. It's not Christian, but it is politically very conservative. And there seems to be a rising interest, if not a hunger, for opposing information that affects the Patriots head on and talks about the issues that we're concerned about, looks at it through a Patriot lens as opposed to the filtered, controlled mass media indoctrination. So, and of course, what we do is indoctrination too. It's the instilling of a doctrine and the way we think, the way we process, the standards that we hold to. That's our doctrine, right? And the left has one as well. And all of the mainstream media, even Fox News, is susceptible to this. We've seen a sharp decline of the Drudge Report taking a sharp, hard left turn now. I saw something somebody sent me. It was a rumor that Google bought out Drudge, but I haven't been able to run that to ground yet. But there was definitely a sharp, noticeable change in the reporting at Drudge Report. So here there in California, they've started up Radio Free California. Now, believe it or not, there are free zones within California, especially the state of Jefferson up north, and then some of the more easterly portions of California where it's very rural, very conservative, and they want no part of the lunacy that the rest of California has dived into. But like many of the other states across the country, they are dominated by the mob in the urban areas, which hold to globalist, Marxist, socialist, communist ideals. So that's who these guys are talking to. They talked about California's climate change satellite, a non-ironic call by Democrats to discover the source of California's rising gas prices. They talk about the tax hike there that drove out the state's biggest taxpayers. So they say there's so much self-inflicted damage in California right now that David will resort to lightning round management, 20 terrifying stories at just 2 minutes each. So they go down these stories, and this is some of the headlines. For you folks in California, to stay apprised on some of the lunacy in California and hear a Patriot's perspective on this, you may just want to check it out. It's Radio Free California. So here's just some of the headlines, the things that they cover, so you have an idea. Harris calls on Twitter CEO to suspend Trump's, that's Kamala Harris, to suspend Trump's account for blatant threats, she says. Kamala Harris shakes up flailing campaign. By the way, Kamala Harris is from California. Kamala Harris's new paid family leave plan is the most generous yet. She undergoes heart surgery after seeing positive reception for Sanders. Dianne Feinstein endorses Joe Biden for president and snubs Kamala Harris. Feinstein calls for gas price investigation. That's funny. Governor Newsom redirects gas tax money to fund railway systems, not highways. That should be no surprise. They always divert tax money into other pet projects. Newsom, the governor, announces new plans for a satellite to track climate change. Wonderful. Supreme Court allows blind people to sue retailers if their websites are not accessible. You visit our new Braille website. Maybe there's some type of special touch screen for that. I don't know. L.A. wants a state of emergency declared as homeless crisis worsens, one they created. The crisis they created. Throwing people in jail on drug charges, that's Bakersfield's idea to fight homelessness. So anyway, there's just a sampling of some of the stories that they've covered over at Radio Free California. For those of you that are still stuck in the occupied zones and you haven't quite taken the gap and made your way to the free zones, like the American Redoubt, there's some information there for you. Now, our neighbors to the north. I got an email from a patriot in Alberta, and he says, "I'd just like to thank you for the knowledge you provided over the years. We're running a Black Echo project in Alberta under Radio Free Alberta. They have a Facebook page. It's a private page, and so they invited me to join that. So I've been tracking with them tracking along with them. Anyway, he sent that, said, "I'd like your input." And of course, I had nothing but encouragement to send to him because they're doing a really good job over there. It's just starting. And he's said he's been a member of Ameron for a couple of years now. The Black Echo Project in Ameron was the inspiration with Radio Free Europe history for providing radio services. So the purpose of Radio Free Alberta is to help educate as well as inform Albertans. And they've done a good job with this. They actually have, for those of you who don't know what the Black Echo Project is, with AMRON, the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, which is beyond nationwide now. We have members in, well, Canada, Puerto Rico, Australia, Germany, England, different countries, where they're trying to implement something similar to AMRON in their own country. So they join AMRON. So very interesting. But and I'll play a sampling of that. But the Black Echo Project is the use of low-power FM or AM transmitters that transmit on the commercial broadcast bands, where you can have essentially your own little radio station for your community, for your neighborhood, you know, to keep them informed. And some of these have higher power capabilities for, it's not legal. But in an emergency, if you're trying to get life-saving information out, it's conceivable that you could turn up the transmitting power and have considerably farther reach, 10, 15 miles with a good antenna. But they are broadcasting in their mobile Black Echo studio transmitter from various different parts of Alberta. And so I'll give you a sampling of that. Listen to this.
This is Radio Free Alberta. We are transmitting on 88.9 FM. From a mobile transmitter. The liberation of Alberta has begun. Phone your MLAs. Write your MLAs. Attend rallies. Take back Alberta for Albertans. This is Radio Free Alberta. Transmitting at 8 p.m. and daily recap at midnight. God bless Alberta. And her patriots. Transmitting from the southeast side of Edmonton this evening. Staying positive does not mean that things will turn out okay. Rather, it is knowing that you will be okay no matter how things turn out. This is Kimberly with Radio Free Alberta.
Anyway, isn't that pretty cool? We're going to, as long as they produce a new one each week, we will air their weekly broadcast from Radio Free Alberta. And we'll air that during Radio Free Redoubt. So good job, guys. We support you. Stay strong. Now, they post a lot of really good stuff on their Facebook page. And there's one here I wanted to share with you. A former Hungarian refugee asks, "Have Canadians lost the will to fight for their freedoms?" Well, of course, a lot of people would say yes, but I want to share this story with you that I found over at Radio Free Alberta's Facebook page. It's a little lengthy, but it's really worth the read. I thought it was just, it was inspirational to me. So this was posted over at Radio Free Alberta. In the 1950s and 1960s, I lived in communist Hungary. Because of alarming events now happening in Canada, I am reminded of my days in Hungary, and I feel compelled to write about the oppressive communist regime after World War II in Hungary. In 1944, fascist Nazi Germany had invaded Hungary. At the end of World War II, the Allied winners divided Europe and gave Hungary to the Soviet Union to govern and ultimately oppress. In 1948, a small Hungarian minority of communists took control of the country illegally and began the collectivization of land, industry, and all aspects of life. Unfortunately, in Canada, we have a similar minority of politically correct cultural Marxists that have all but taken over Canada and are turning Canada over to UN globalist interests. I was born in Hungary in World War II to middle-class parents. During communist occupation of Hungary after World War II, my family experienced living in constant fear and increasing poverty. At times, we did not have sufficient basics of life, such as food. After World War II, my father, a newly graduated lawyer, could not practice law due to the significant changes in Hungarian law as a result of the Soviet takeover. Since he was not considered a member of the working class, some officials viewed him as the enemy of the working class. As a result, he had meager means to support our family. He became basically an insignificant accountant in a factory owned by the government. Collectivized farms and the Communist Party presence in all aspects of our lives are forever etched in my memory. In October 23rd of 1956, the people rose up in revolution against their communist oppressors, and armed fighting broke out primarily in Budapest. The Hungarian army joined the freedom fighters. Even as a teenager, I would have gladly joined them, but I was out of harm's way living with my grandparents in the outskirts of Budapest. However, many teenagers, some of whom were my schoolmates, gave their lives fighting for freedom. The revolution succeeded temporarily, and the Russian army left Budapest. Unfortunately, on November 4th, that's tomorrow, 1956, the Russian military returned with a vengeance. I remember when my neighbors were slaughtered as they stood unarmed, waiting in line to buy bread at a bakery. Suddenly, Soviet tanks appeared on the highway about 1,000 meters away from the bakery. The tank crew assumed the people in the lineup were freedom fighters and discharged shells into the lineup. Many innocent people lost their lives that morning. I heard the shots and rushed to the scene to find out what had happened, only to discover that several of my neighbors were lying dead on the ground while many more were injured. I distinctly remember a nice old male neighbor who died that day. The slaughter of innocent neighbors is still vivid in my memory 64 years later. After the Soviet invasion, so-called Hungarian education consisted of Marxist principles, the role of unions, the class struggle, the economic principles of a socialist communist state, and the philosophy behind the works of Marx, Engels, and Lenin. So-called education in Canada today bears alarming similarities. Although we were young and impressionable, we instinctively sensed the fallacies in our university studies. Many years later, when I see Trudeau, memories of Hungary's cult of personality, communism, and corruption come to my mind immediately. Canada is rapidly morphing into a quasi-totalitarian state, which, if the Canadian people are not vigilant, could result in a complete takeover of this country. Prime Minister Trudeau is leading the charge down this path. I am fearful about this turn of events because, in my wildest imagination, I could not anticipate this would happen in Canada. I had always admired Canada as my ideal for personal freedom, entrepreneurship, and a free market economy, human rights, ability to assemble, freedom of speech and religion, and so much more. While living in communist Hungary, I looked to Western countries as a beacon of hope for me and for others. I am deeply concerned that these rights and freedoms are increasingly being dismantled and that one day the Canadian people will wake up to find that their rights are severely curtailed and the government has intruded into every aspect of their lives as government did in communist Hungary. Since the end of World War II, all Western European nations, as well as Canada, the United States, Australia, and New Zealand, have made a de facto deal with the power establishment elites that have bribed them to shut up and to enjoy their narcissistic lifestyles. In return for their silence, the elite have agreed to provide a comfortable lifestyle to them as long as they don't demand anything that threatens the elite's power. If the cultural Marxist assault on free speech continues, while promoting identity politics, radical feminism, white guilt, racism against white people, persecution of Christians and conservatives, support of Islam, and uncontrolled mass immigration, then this path will serve only one end goal, radical transformation of the Canada we know. Canada will cease to be a nation state and will be controlled by United Nations globalist forces. Many Canadians have forgotten how to fight and how to keep their freedoms as a result of the good life that took their attention away from the important things in their lives. Those things are being hijacked by unrelenting so-called progressives. As Ronald Reagan asserted, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. It cannot be passed to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on to them. In contrast to North Americans, the people of Central European nations, such as Hungary, Poland, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic, Baltic states, such as Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, as well as the former communist Yugoslavia, have not forgotten the hardships and limited freedoms under the dictatorship of the former Soviet Union and its puppets. Oppressive totalitarian regimes forced these nations to think about freedom, how to regain it, and how to keep it. The big threat to Canada today is oppression from the UN and from aggressive immigrant groups such as the Muslim Brotherhood and others who want to recreate in Canada the failed societies they came from. Today, many Central European countries struggle against the United Nations, the current version of the Soviet Union, to preserve their sovereignty, culture, freedoms, and Christian heritage. Canada must do the same. The Canadian people have never had to live under communism, Nazism, Sharia law, or any other dictatorship, and consequently do not see this danger as an imminent and potential reality. They have taken their freedom for granted. Is it realistic to expect the people of Western nations to fight for freedom and their sovereignty when they have totally forgotten or are unaware of the importance of fighting and keeping their culture, values, borders, and religion? Will it only be when Canadians experience hardships and loss of their freedoms that they are compelled to fight for their freedoms and sovereignty of their nation? Canadians must take back their country. It's getting late. That is from someone who fled communism to come to the Western free world and who's warning us. We have plenty of them in the United States that are warning us of what is rising up around us, and we need to pay attention to those voices. This is Radio Free Redoubt. We'll be right back.
The budget should be balanced. The treasury should be refilled. Public debt should be reduced. The arrogance of officialdom should be tempered and controlled, and the assistance to foreign lands should be curtailed, lest the nation become bankrupt. People must again learn to work instead of living on public assistance. What a new and revolutionary idea. Can you guess who proposed this change in policy? If you were thinking Ronald Reagan, guess again. Abraham Lincoln? Keep going. Thomas Paine? Nope. Go back about 18 centuries. It was author and philosopher Marcus Tullius Cicero, referring to Rome about 50 years or so before Christ was born. Yeah, I know. That's how I felt. Will we ever learn? I'm Violet Sabo. with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Are you prepared for an economic, socio-political collapse in America? Do you wonder how something like that could be possible? What would that even look like? I recommend Glenn Tate's 10-book series titled 299 Days. From a lawyer and government insider's perspective, he lays out a plausible scenario that could very well come about if we continue on the path we're on as a country. Through his fictional character, he lays out his own real-life journey to prepare himself and his family for the possibility of a future full of difficult challenges and what seem like impossible choices. 299 Days is a high-action dystopian novel written from the perspective of the average Joe American and outlines realistic plans and action steps that you could implement to prepare yourself and those around you for the difficult possibilities ahead. Go to 299days.com to learn more. This is the fourth and final segment of The Voice of the American Redoubt. And we've got, a couple of minutes to go over some stuff going on. Speaking of the UN, this is very timely. Segment four is brought to you by our sponsor, Works Holsters. Works LLC, and it's spelled W-E-R-K-Z, as in Zulu. Works.com. To find out how you can get your custom holsters, Kydex holsters, and magazine carriers that are made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. All right, now, before I get into this segment, the UN taking over a town in Utah. Interesting. Well, before I get to that, though, had a listener letter from a codename Mr. Mason. And I'm going to dedicate at least one, maybe two segments to next week's show addressing this. It ties in with the Going Underground series that I did, which is available on the thumb drive in our Redoubt Gear store for $15. Going Underground. Now, I'm going to read this to you because I want to solicit some input from you in the listening audience, because I know a lot of you have given thought to things like this question here. Now, I have already begun a preliminary list of responses to different aspects of this email. So I want to solicit your feedback and go through it, compile it, and include it also in next week's, and combine it with the list of items and action items that I'll be talking about next week. But here's the letter. Happy Sunday, John Jacob. I'm writing today to ask you and the members of AMRON for advice and suggestions. Would you please read this email on air so that AMRON members can hear it and respond to it? Well, I'd be happy to. Here it is. Hypothetical situation. You are on a mission behind enemy lines and something goes wrong. You make your way to a local safe house that is located in a residential section on the edge of a city with countryside, ranches, and farms just minutes in the other direction. What equipment, gear, provisions, options, choices would you hope to find in that safe house? What goods and services could be inside the safe house that you would consider to be critical, essential, helpful, or nice, or just desired, or just plain convenient? Thank you. AMRON, codename Mr. Mason. All right, that's a great question, and this is going to make a great segment, if not two segments. Next week, I'll cover this, and I'm looking very much forward to this because there are definitely some things that are must-have, some things that would be nice. So what's the difference between critical, essential, helpful, nice, desired, or convenient? So there's your homework assignment, Patriots. If you want to contribute to that, just email me and just type a safe house in the subject line, and I'll add that to my subject notes. So thank you, Mr. Mason, for that question. All right. Now, last week,
I started getting emails from listeners saying, have you heard about this? The United Nations shuts down the free press. They took over the conference center in Salt Lake and they declared it international space, and it's not United States territory, and it's international territory. And I'm like, what? The UN's pretty off the rails, but that's pretty bold. There must be more to the story. Somebody's embellishing. They're taking things, blowing it out of proportion. I don't know. I need to look into this. So I started looking into it. And guess what? It's true. DefendingUtah.org, their website, Think Right and Wrong, Not Right and Left. They did a great job exposing this, including the video of the incident that took place. It is very clearly a security officer, a woman, who is very clearly a foreigner, tells this independent journalist, concerned citizen activist, to stop filming because she doesn't want to be filmed. And the girl challenges her. She says, this is my city. I am an American citizen. I have the right to film. And she says, no, this is international territory. Outside the doors is the U.S. Seriously. So I contacted my contacts in the John Birch Society. And I said, hey, have you heard of this? Can you confirm this? Is this legit? Is this staged? Is this... And they ran it to ground and they said, no, this is legit. And I got a letter here I'm going to share with you in just a little bit. But I've got some of the audio from that video and we'll post this. You can go to defendingutah.org and watch it yourself and see the article that I'm going over and covering right now. But let me play this segment for you. And there's subtitles on the video at defendingutah.org, but you can definitely get the gist of it by listening. So take a listen. We'll be right back.
Is it okay you turn off the camera and then I speak?
Oh, turn off the camera?
Yeah.
Do I not have a right to have the camera?
I'm not giving you permission to check my face, so...
Okay, are you a public servant?
I'm a United Nations Security Officer.
Okay. This is my city, and so I have a right to film.
This is United Nations compound?
United Nations compound?
Yes.
This is a compound?
Yeah. Since Sunday evening, we took over this compound. This is international territory. When you step outside, it's U.S. Here is international territory. This is U.N. compound.
The United Nations claims to be the champion of your human rights. Here, they are boasting about how they love the freedom of the press. But notice that in the UN Declaration of Human Rights, they claim the power to deny you any of your rights, at their discretion, if it doesn't fit their agenda. There were thousands of cameras filming the United Nations that day, activists, journalists, and citizens. But as soon as their security saw that one activist was speaking against the UN's agenda, she was targeted, just like the UN's Declaration on Human Rights says that they have a loophole for. Let's recap what you just saw. The UN set up a compound in the middle of Salt Lake City. The UN says they took over the building. The UN stated that the taxpayer-funded Salt Lake Palace was now international territory where U.S. rights don't apply. The UN stated that the United States was outside the doors of the Salt Palace, and the UN, who at best should have been a guest of Salt Lake, instead acted like an invader and denied a U.S. citizen their First Amendment rights. Should the United Nations be allowed to simply claim territory in the middle of the United States and deny any U.S. citizen any of their inalienable rights? The evidence is clear that the United Nations claims of defending human rights is a complete farce. They have demonstrated their intent to rule, along with their complete lack of respect for our own citizens, for all to see, right here on our own soil. That's not all. But this has all been brought to you by your fellow elected leaders and other prominent Utah officials. The Utah legislature actually paid for them to come here and defended this international compound with your tax dollars. the mayor of Salt Lake City welcomed them with open arms, and the executives of Utah Valley University invited them here shortly after they officially signed up to promote the UN's agenda through the university.
Isn't that unreal and unacceptable? The United Nations needs to be kicked out of the United States, and the United States needs to get out of the United Nations. Defending Truth or defendingutah.org, great job covering this. Telling an American citizen they don't have First Amendment rights because this is international territory in Salt Lake City in the United States. Pointing to the door, telling her that's where the United States is, outside that door. And they were invited in by the people in that city. That's unacceptable. Of course, the weasels of the SPLC, they got to weigh in. The commie sympathizers. This is their headline. Townspeople of Laverkan, Utah take on the United Nations. And this just came out. Where was this? Where did it go? Oh, the slogan, Think Globally, Act Locally, takes on a new meaning as the tiny Laverkan, Utah adopts the anti-United Nations conspiratorial beliefs of the radical right. This was from years ago. But that's their attitude. I haven't seen the SPLC weigh in on this latest one, but it's conspiratorial beliefs of the radical right. That's how the SPLC weighs in on this type of stuff when the United Nations does this in our own soil. So I contacted the John Birch Society. I said, is this legit? Is this real? What do you guys know about this? And lo and behold, they were all over it already. And so a letter was sent out that I'll share with you from Bliss 2, which is the area field coordinator for Utah, Arizona, Nevada, and southern Wyoming. And they put this out. So let me go through this email. Dear JBS, that's John Birch Society members, they are watchdogs of communism and Marxism and the enemies of America. Excellent. And also, that's where the New American magazine comes from. If you're not a subscriber or not a member of John Birch Society, I strongly urge you to join this week. Today, Friday, October 25th, is the day after the UN Day of Shame, the UN's 74th birthday. Oh, I forgot to cover that. Perhaps you didn't get to attend the United Nations 68th Civil Society Conference held at Salt Lake City this past August. The UN has finally posted their edited films, 3-day conference. By the way, yeah, this event took place in August. I forgot to mention that. The UN has finally posted their edited films of the 3-day conference. And then he gives a link to that. I'll put it in the highlights and resources posting so you can go and watch that. But you can hear Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski talk and participate in a panel discussion on stage. You can watch the Utah Navajo dancers perform, etc. Some 4,000 delegates of non-government organizations form around the world were gathered in the Salt Palace Conference Center to create the illusion of global consensus that all of mankind is united to battle their foe, man-caused climate change crisis. And it gives a link also to the conference. There is a new October 21st issue of the New American titled UN to America, We're the Boss, that can be ordered and given selectively to develop the understanding of those you select whom you believe will read it. Let us all renew our dedication to stop the effectiveness of the UN roadshow conferences by promoting our Get Us Out of the UN campaign, doing outreach to Congress to pass H.R. 204 to get us out of the UN and exposing the UN's plans. How many of you can purchase extra copies of the November 4th, 2019 issue of the New American cover titled Act Now to Live Poor, the UN's plan for you, to share with your state legislators, your political party precinct chairman, your local radio talk show host, local business owners, local conservative groups, and your prospects for membership in the John Birch Society. Today, this is the day and age. I really do think that patriots, it's time. It's time to get involved. And I've been a longtime supporter of the John Birch Society. So anyway, I just want to share that a little bit of that email from you. A lot of it's kind of hard because it's kind of hard to track because I'm looking at links and things like that that you can't see. So we'll get those posted so you guys can follow those through. Also, they have here a first-hand account of socialism. In this week's episode of Matter of Action, Wayne Morrow talks with author and historian Frank de Verona, who grew up in Cuba and witnessed the communist takeover by Fidel Castro. Now, what I'm doing is I'm reading to you something that was that I got from the John Birch Society, which was in their September 2nd issue of Exposing Socialism. Very well done. I have it. I don't have it right in front of me. I wish I would have grabbed it, but it talks with the author and historian, Frank de Verona. Now, he watched Fidel Castro come into power. De Verona explains that in 1958, Cuba was one of the most prosperous Latin American countries, and within just a few years of Castro coming to power, the economy crashed and food was rationed. Thanks, communism, socialism. Morrow and de Verona compare this to Venezuela, which used to be the richest country in Latin America due to its oil fields, but today people are eating out of garbage trucks. De Verona tells Morrow that the Spanish-speaking news channels promote socialism, so he has been busy educating Latinos in Florida. He stresses the importance of teaching the millennial generation who have been indoctrinated since a very young age. De Verona says that as parents, we all have the responsibility to teach our children about socialism, otherwise we will lose our nation. An easy way this can be done is by distributing our Do It Like Denmark reprint, which is an article in our, there we go, September 2nd issue, and it's titled Socialist Jackpot. This reprint comes with 10 easy-to-read facts about socialism that will make millennials think twice. It is imperative that we educate the younger generations about the dangers of socialism and the false promises of the presidential candidates. Socialism is not the cure. Get your copy today at shopjbs.org. So go and check that out. Get that. You can buy multiple copies. The more you buy, the cheaper it is to pass out to folks that would appreciate this and read it. It's really well done. I haven't finished reading the whole thing, but it's all their stuff is always good. And then I just want to close out with this. From Micah chapter 2, verses 1 through 2. Woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil on their beds. When morning comes, they do it, for it is in the power of their hands. They covet fields and then seize them, and houses and take them away. They rob a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. That right there is what socialists do. They scheme and they work out evil on their beds, and when the morning comes, they do it because they have the power within their hands to do it. They covet what you have and they scheme on how to take it. It's theft, and we're warned of it. They work out evil, and they are working out evil in our own country, declaring it as international territory. If you want to go back to the United States, then there's the door. Outside that door is the United States. While we're in here, we're going to scheme to take from you what we are coveting. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. You have a blessed week. Stay strong. Keep your powder dry. Have good situational awareness. Be alert. And share the good news with your friends and family. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, and this is Radio Free Redoubt, episode 19-40. Good night.